How's it going, everybody? Welcome to Stage Voices. We are back with Mason Love. Really nice, creative guy. Before we jump into Mason and his story, I want to take some time to acknowledge a great thing happened to my last guest, Mr. David Scott, sound design professional. He is now working. He's the supervisor of lighting and sound at Signet Theater. So congrats to you, buddy. Love what you do. Speaking of Signet Theater, Mason Love. Mason Love is he's a guy who I met during my time at SDSU. Still going time. He actually graduated, and he does some amazing set designs and has a very unique process, a very unique role in the most current Signet show. By the way, speaking of the most current Signet show, this is why we have a little E next to our, a little explicit symbol next to this podcast, because usually I'd say, like, up until this point, the past couple of podcasts have been pretty clean. However, this one, the F-bombs get dropped because, well, mainly we're talking about a show. If you happen to be listening to this podcast with kids in the car or people whose ears melt when they hear swear words, this might be one to put on hold until you have reached your private time. That also sounded very weird, but you know what? I'm not going to edit that out. I'm just going to let it run. So yes, new show at Signet, Motherfucker with a Hat. I hear it's great. We will be talking about that. Enough of this chit chat. Let's get to the podcast. Well, I was going to say MFA candidate.
Not anymore.
But not anymore. now the graduated, decorated MFA master of fine arts and set design guru, Mr. Mason Lev.
Hello.
Hey, So how's your whole life been now that you've just gotten this degree that says that you're an ace at putting together sets?
It's slowly dawning on me that I have finally graduated and I am not coming back next semester.
Yeah. It's got to be a trip.
Yeah. Feels good, though.
Nice.
Three years, 25 years of schooling finally ending and now onto the real world for good.
Yeah. And you're going to Disney now.
I am going to Disney. I start on a week from tomorrow, so the 2nd of June.
Yes. Quite a different venture than what you just did. This is going to be the podcast of why I have the little E next to the podcast. Cuz be talking about your latest project a lot and saying the F word a lot.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah, I was gonna ask, I'll bleep myself, I suppose.
Oh no, that's it's fine. Yeah, I have the little explicit label next.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so
the show I assisted on, The Motherfucker with the Hat, just opened yesterday.
Yeah. At Signet Theater.
Signet Theater. They run for the next, I think it's like month and a half.
I just saw, I didn't see it. Like, I know it just opened. Mm-hmm. My roommates went to see it and they said it was really good.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
The acting in it is really good. The set design was done by, Andy Hull, who is a, currently he works on Mad Men as one of their, set people in the art department.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was kind of his liaison when he was out of town, the one kind of implementing everything getting done at Signet and helping when I could.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was a different experience. I've never been an assistant at that I guess, level of involvement. Usually all my assistantship has always been just with drafting and building, but this one was actually had to be there helping them build it, interpret his plans, make decisions for him, and be able to make decisions on the fly.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you actually, like, did you get to really, like, work with him, or were you here at the theater working when he wasn't there?
I was mostly at the theater here working when he wasn't here, because since he lives in LA, all of his design work happened up there.
Oh.
Yeah, so he included me on the process, like, this is what I'm thinking, this is the direction we're going. So I was there every step of the way, I just wasn't there physically helping him, I guess.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Did he, like, really ever come down to the theater?
He came down. He usually came down once a week on Saturdays for the production meetings. And he kind of showed me stuff that I had already seen. And I learned a lot just seeing how he interacted with everyone else during the production meeting and being able to see how he reacts to changes. And, like, he's really good. He's really good at what he does.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just seems like that is kind of an interesting idea, like a way to design.
Mm-hmm.
Almost kind of just coming in and possessing your body.
In a way,
in
yeah.
In a way, yes. But that's really rad. So he came up with the designs,
mm-hmm.
and the way to do everything, and then you said, all right, this is how we're going to do it.
So. Yeah, yeah. So especially during Tech Week, I was really involved because, you know, he couldn't be there for most of it. So as the week went on, I knew what he wanted. We'd had lots of conversations on the last couple meetings about how he wanted things to change. So during the week, I was the one taking the notes, giving it to the different departments and making sure that they were getting done, taking photos of the set, sending it to Andy, making sure he was okay with what was happening, and if not, figuring out what needed to change, and then communicating that to the department heads. So I was a middleman. I was a big middleman.
Nice. Well, it seems like a very fun process to be a middleman on.
Yeah, yeah. It was really great.
That's awesome. So what got you into doing set design? And is that originally what you wanted to do?
No, it wasn't. I first started, I guess, in middle school acting, and then in high school I acted. And
it always happens
college,
that way, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I actually have a degree in acting as well. So
really,
yeah, it wasn't until my second year in Humboldt State, my undergrad, that I decided that I wanted to do set design. I had a professor there named Jody Sikas, who he kind of became my mentor. Like, seeing what he would do with the sets that my acting classes were on and that the school shows were on really inspired me and got me wanting to get into it. So I started taking all the classes I could from him and then learning from him, and then eventually just kind of embraced it and added it as a second major.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when did you kind of, like, realize that it was that this is the thing that you're good at or you have this passion for?
It was actually my last year of undergrad, where I was in a show. I was acting in a show and I was designing a show, and I was having much, much more fun designing this other show than I was acting in this show.
The other show.
The Marriage of Bette and Boo. I was in The Marriage of Bette and Boo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's a good show. I just...
Durang?
Yes, it was. It's a really fun show, but it was just... I was just having more fun with designing the sets.
What set were you... Was it the same show?
No, it was a different show. The show I was designing was City of Angels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty lengthy musical. It has, like, 32 set changes... I think it's like a dozen sets. I also did the projection design on it as well.
Wow.
Yeah. I couldn't think straight for a while.
So, were you like the assistant on that, or were you?
No, I was given the honor of being an undergrad to design the main stage musical. So it was all me.
That was your first design that you did.
His first major design, yeah. The other things I had done was I helped found a student group that would do, like, really small... we did an opera. We did two dinner theater shows called Café Chantant. That was speakeasy themed for the first one, and then 1940s USO show for the second one. And then other than that, just like really small things. Yeah.
Oh, nice. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
What was the process like going into it so new?
I screwed up at the very beginning. Someone had, well, the meeting time for the first production meeting got changed and no one told me. So I was an hour late to it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I rushed in, the director was still there. She told me what she wanted, showed me a lot of really good research images. And then from that, I went on and just did, a plethora of just research, not only to film noir, because it's a heavy, heavy film noir play.
Yeah.
But also into the Hollywood of 1930s and 1940s, because that's where the play takes place, or the musical takes place. So once I got all my research, I did another presentation for her about where I was thinking about going with color and theme and all that. She told me what she liked, what she didn't like. Then I went back and started, I tend to draft the ground plan first before I do anything.
Yeah.
Not like super detailed, but just like block shapes that I like. And then off of that, I start building the model off of that model was a half inch model. So it's twice as, twice as big as what I usually work in. So it took twice as long. But yeah, after that, then I started doing all the paint elevations and then all the detail drafting. So I think the entire process was probably about 2 months.
Wow.
2 months long.
What are paint elevations?
Paint elevations are you take each one of the walls of the set and then you just do a dead-on view of it. And then that dead-on view, you paint, you either physically paint or in Photoshop paint exactly what you want it to look like. It's the piece of paper that you give the paint shop and that they will... mix the paint based off of and then use it as a guide to paint the actual thing.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was interesting, like the way that you could get, I mean, you've got to have like, you know, skilled painters, but
yeah,
it seems like, especially with the set designer, you have to have so many different, like skills and assets because you're, it's one thing to construct something or to like, this would be a great idea to for, you know, for walls or how to the layout of the set to look, but then also, you know, being able to do like interior design.
Yeah. Set design, it really is, you have to be a jack of all trades. You need to know architectural history, you need to know decor history, you need to know what somebody in Georgia in 1920 would, what kind of sofa they would have. You need to know everything about that. And you also, especially in theater, you need to be able to argue, no, we can build that because we can do this and this. Or, yes, we can paint it this way because we can use this finish and this glaze and this top coat to make it look like that. So you need to know a lot. You don't necessarily have to be able to do everything, but you need to know that it can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a lot. Especially because I'm thinking I focus so much on sound if I'm sound designing something, which is great because you just have to like think, oh, what does a doorbell sound like?
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, if I'm directing, I will generally like leave it up to designers or have you know, have certain like key elements. That's what I'm doing right now with the show I'm going to be directing for State in the next year. Comedy of Errors, but like I have to have like the concepts of what I'm going to be doing, but then it's going to be all passed down to different designers who really know what they're doing to take it on.
Yeah.
So you know, which would be you. Anyway. Yeah. So did you go straight then from Humboldt to SDSU?
No, I took a year off. my now fiance Kylie, she still had one more year in Humboldt to do.
Okay.
So I kind of I stuck around town. I did work with a couple local theaters. I designed Inspecting Carol with the Rialto Theater Company. And I also did a couple working backstage on a couple shows for Humboldt Light Opera Company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then after we kind of decided that we wanted to move out of Humboldt County, because we both love Humboldt County, but there's no work for either of us, sustainable work for either of us there. So I applied to San Diego State and University of British Columbia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And SDSU got you.
SDSU got me.
Yeah. You did some great work over there.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes. Jungle Book, that was a fantastic one.
Thank you.
Especially because I saw the time that they first did it.
Yeah.
So that design, that design was in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought it was really cool, like the way that the two, like the city and then the jungle was so like present in your design.
Yeah.
Where you had like the street lamp and then the wall and like kind of like fading into this like jungle atmosphere.
Yeah. Having those kind of human elements that seem to be taken over by nature again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which there's that, is it a Talking Head song or I think it, like covered in flowers or something. Just basically.
Oh yeah.
Talking about like all like the crazy stuff that no longer like all the main corporate buildings and stuff that's all just kind of taken over by nature again.
Yeah.
And lamenting. So also now through that whole process that you just went through for your MFA, was there any like key shows that you really that stuck with you?
Yeah, actually, as far as the shows that state at state, my first show there was by far my favorite. It was Vinegar Tom that I did with the director was Peter Larlum.
Oh yeah,
that was my favorite show that I did here. Working with him was a dream come true. He was extremely helpful in giving the general direction that he wanted to go in and allowing me to kind of discover what the environment wanted to be. But then also when things weren't quite going to work, he was very good at being like, well, you know, you might want to rethink this because of this and this. And be like, oh, totally. And then going back and coming up with another idea for him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So what was, I didn't see that one. What was the overall theme? I understand it's a dark show.
It's a very dark show. It's a Carol Churchill show, and it's, she famously calls it the play about witches without any witches. The entire play takes place in the 1600s in England, during their witch trial period. And the show looks at these group of women that are being labeled as witches, but they're not actually witches. They are just women that don't fit the social norm of the time. So they, you know, is an old woman that's not married. There is a young woman that doesn't want to get married, but wants to experience, you know, being with, not even being with other men, but just being single and being able to interact with other men. And seeing how society, in order to control those women, label them as witches under religious grounds so they can oppress them and at the very end hang two of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's very dark, which was ironic because we all loved that play so much and we loved being there and everyone had a good time and a smile on their face.
Oh, wow. That's definitely a Peter Larlum show.
Yeah.
That's the experience. Was that in the experimental theater? Was that smaller?
That was in the experimental, the smaller one. So, and it was also in theater of the round. So, you know, we couldn't have any walls of any sort because we would block off half the audience.
Wow.
So it was the only requirements he gave me was that it wanted to be in the round and that it wanted to be 18 inches off the ground to alleviate sightline issues even more. And so based off of that, I came up with this ground, this platform that had painted on it all these different etchings and paintings and news articles even about women who have been oppressed over the years by being labeled as witches. Even there was one article that came out, I think, 3 weeks before the opening, that was a woman that was beheaded in Saudi Arabia for being a witch.
Wow.
So the set itself really wanted to show that this is not an old thing that happened back then. This is something that's still happening now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And then the only other scenic element we had was this big beam, two beams on the ground and one beam across the top that could act as the inside outside support structure of a building, but also hid the nooses for the end of the play.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, did you actually show people being hung?
Yes, we did. Not physically being hung, but, the technical director and, Eben Alguire, I'm messing up his last name. He's going to laugh at me so much.
I've heard of one Eben in my life.
Yes. So they came up with this rigging harness that the actresses would wear that when the nooses came down, the noose actually connected to the back of their harness and not actually to their neck. So even if something went wrong, they would just fall onto the floor and nothing would actually grab their neck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah, that's bad PR when actors die.
Yes. You had to create something in the round.
Mm-hmm.
People being hung. I would want to think like the lack of walls is a little bit limiting, oddly enough. Because, I mean, they're walls, so walls are limiting in themselves, but
yeah.
To not be able to have that.
Well, we always have walls everywhere we look, so walls are such an easy and convenient device to portray, like, time and place.
Yeah.
Once those are taken away, it's much, much harder to be able to communicate that.
So how'd you do that?
Mainly the beam. The big beam was, it was made out of 1x6 pine, just normal wood. And then we used an axe to actually chop it up so it looked like it was hand-hewn wood. And then we burned it, scraped off the burned charred wood, and then painted it with a dark brown and then glazed it with a matte finish so it looked like an old beam from the time period.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we started adding set dressing of like old oil lamps, some horse tack, herbs and spices hanging from the ceiling so it looked a little bit more domestic at times.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Nice. I guess going forward a little bit to now your most recent show,
mm-hmm.
Motherfucker with a Hat.
Yeah.
So did you get to put like any of your own creativeness on that, or was it did the creativity mainly come from figuring out, like, okay.
Yeah, in this case, it was the creativity that I got to bring into it was more of a managerial creativity and being able to interpret his designs given the restrictions of the theater and being able to make that transition happen while still keeping the essence of what he wanted.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how much did you have to... The word edit is coming to my mind, but...
Oh, yeah. Tweak is, yes, a good word. Yeah. Not that much, because Andy, knowing that he had to do this from LA, he wanted to simplify it enough to make it quicker to build and paint, but be able to create these three very distinct, realistic environments. A lot of my tweaks just had to do with... there was like one specific scenic element, this cornice that ran across one of the scenic elements that physically could not fit in the space that he had. So I had to come up with, okay, well, you know, if we can't do that, we should just paint this design onto it to kind of give the illusion of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, after that, taking pictures and sending it off to him to make sure that he was okay with it.
So there's constant like, okay, here's what I did.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
that okay?
Do we have to do it again?
Did you have to like redo anything?
Luckily, no, we didn't have to redo anything.
Nice. Yeah. He was happy with it all.
He was happy with it all.
That's good.
Yeah.
So have you worked at Signet before, or is this your first show there?
This is the first show, my first show there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it like going in there like for the first time and going hopefully on time to the production meetings?
Yeah, this time I was on time. It was you know, like going to any new job, you know, you tried to meeting all the new people, figuring out how the office dynamics work, and being able to be I don't even know how to describe it. Like, I guess just open to their new way of working and being able to adapt yourself to how that theater works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of taking everything in. And mm-hmm. Did you have to, like, I guess take some time going around the space and getting used to everything?
Yeah. One of the first meetings that we actually went to the theaters, to take a look at everything that was there, being able to see all the restrictions that we had building the set. Because the set is mainly a 16-foot wall that's also 22 feet wide. So we had to be able to figure out how that was going to get into the theater because it was going to be built outside the theater. And,
oh, wow.
And then being able to figure out the sightline issues because they're, you know, the theater itself is basically a three-quarter thrust. So when you have that flat wall, it's hard to see the wall from the extreme sightline angles. So we had to figure out other elements to bring into the set itself or the platform itself to kind of denote these three different locations.
Yeah, and so did you have to tweak a lot of that, or was that just kind of knowing, all right, well, here are going to be some sight lines. This is, did you ever have to, like, I guess tell the Andrew that in advance, or did he already have it done?
Had most of it done, but a lot of it during rehearsal processes, the actors and the director would see the ground plan, see the limitations, especially when they got into the space, and would adjust themselves. And then if the furniture was just really bad, they, you know, would contact me and Andy and be like, "Can we tweak it this way?" And we'd be like, "Oh yeah, totally. That's fine. If that's what needs to happen, that's what needs to happen. People need to see this."
Yeah. It's like, oh, this nice set that I've created is good and all, but...
Yeah. If no one sees it, there's really no point in it being so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how was it working with the production team over there?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. It was really nice because they, you know, this is what they do so every day. So they're... not only really good at building and constructing, but they're also really good at working with other and new people and being able to ease them in. And then if mistakes are being made, coming up and being like, okay, well, let's tweak this. How can we work this out so this doesn't happen again?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So everybody's really supportive.
Really supportive. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they always say, like, 'cause there's the different theaters around San Diego, and it's and they seem to be attached with colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Like USD is the Globe, UCSD is the Rapid. It seems then, like, people always say that, you know, SDSU is kind of, you know, pipelined in with Signet.
Yeah,
so they're constantly working with as well as, you know, the people that they have normally on there.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Murray, the artistic director there. Once a year, he always comes to state and interviews a lot of the MFA design students, trying to find people that he would want to come in and work with the theater to be able to get that professional experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So how did you get picked up by Sean?
Actually, that was how I interviewed with him. And I got to say, Sean has a great poker face.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm presenting my stuff and he's looking at it and he's very focused and very friendly. But I couldn't get a read on, like, is this going well? Is this not going well? I'm just going to continue. So finish the conversation. And then I think about 2 months later, one of our professors came up to me and was like, "Oh, so will you be interested next year in working on Motherfucker with the Hat?" And then specifically telling me that there's a designer for it, but you'll be his liaison with the theater because he lives in LA. And that really intrigued me because I'm like, oh, this is really, that's really cool. I've never really done something like that.
It's a new experience.
It might be something I'm really interested in doing.
Yeah. So did anything from like your past experience or like school, like help prepare you for this unique opportunity?
Yeah. I'd say learning how to, not that there weren't really any bad personalities, but dealing with people that didn't have good personalities on shows helped me be able to think quick on my feet when a problem came up, and being able to be like, okay, well, let's fix it this way, and being able to have that confidence in my abilities to be like, we should do it this way, and having people be like, yeah, well, let's do that then.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, those, it seems like you have to go through a lot of those little trial by fires.
Yeah, yeah, trials by fires are unfortunate things that you have to go through, but you have to go through them.
Yeah.
They build character and they make everything that much easier the next time you do it.
Oh, they do, yeah. Yeah, definitely. As we wrap up here,
because
I know you got to get out and do your thing. get all packed up
for LA.
Yes. And you're working with the studio, right?
I'm working for actually Disney Imagineering. It's the end of Disney that actually designs and builds the theme parks. So I'm working for an area of it called Scenic Illusions. I have absolutely no idea what I'll be doing with them. but the best I can figure is that Scenic Illusions takes things that research and development develops and then creates experiences around it. And then the rest of Disney Imagineering will take those little vignettes and things that Scenic Illusion does and adds them into rides that they may or may not be doing.
Oh,
that's
nice.
That's the best I can glean. I will know more in 1 week.
Oh, well, there you have it.
Yeah.
So do you have any, I guess, philosophies on what you do?
Yeah. The first one that comes to my mind is more work now, less work later.
Yeah.
So the more time and effort I put into my research and my pre-designs, the less work I'll have to do during tech week. The less like, oh, well, this is a problem. Why didn't you think about it then?
Yeah.
The less that comes up and the smoother things go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I guess as cheesy as it sounds, keep learning because, I mean, architecture has been around for thousands of years. So the more you know about stuff like that, the easier it's going to be to design new things and be able to come up with some kind of design that encompasses the message of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally true. Anytime, like, I feel like the biggest, like, wall in any profession that you have is to think that you've got it all figured out.
Yeah. The second you do that, you're not going to get hired anymore.
Yeah.
Because you'll get bogged down in what you've already done, and the next thing is always the more interesting thing, not really the thing that you did before.
Yeah. Yeah. So, with all that said, do you have any advice for people trying to break into the set biz, building biz?
Yeah, be friendly. That's the best advice, I think, is, you know, when you're doing a project, you're going to be spending 10, 12 hours a day with people at times. So if they don't want to be around you, everything's going to be that much harder.
Yeah.
That, and also just if something comes up, take it. If you don't think you can do it anyway, because especially during college is the time to fail, because nothing, your job's not on the line, your paycheck's not on the line. It is the perfect place to learn what you do like doing, what you don't like doing, and how much you can do and how much you can't do. And every time you push yourself that much farther, the more you can do later, which makes you more marketable once you get out of school.
Yes, very true. Those are very wise words. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming in here and sitting down this podcast and talking about set design.
No, yeah. Thank you for having me. This has been this has been a blast.
Yes. Well, maybe there'll be a future podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe even by you.
I will be back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. If we can get you back on this, that would be rad.
Yeah.
Actually figure out what that Disney is.
Oh, yeah. I know I'll have to sign a non-disclosure, but anything I can disclose, I will disclose.
that'd be interesting, having a fun little, like, oh, well, we can talk a little bit about this, but...
I could tell you the general stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming by, and good luck out there, and great job, motherfucker with a hat.
Thank you very much.
All right.
All right.
All right. What a guy. What a guy. That's all I can say from that. Oh, Mason Love, thank you so much. So remember, Motherfucker with a Hat, it just opened at Signet Theater. So go check that out. And if you happen to be in the greater San Diego area, or maybe not the greater San Diego area, but you want to come check it out, I'm going to be doing some stand-up at the La Jolla Comedy Store on May 28th, this Wednesday. So go ahead and check that out. Once again, check out Signet's wonderful lineup. Check out Mason Love's awesome job at being a liaison. And there you have it. Have a wonderful time. Hope you had a great Memorial Day weekend, a great Memorial Day. And have fun back at work. All right. See you next time, guys.